They don't know if it talks your ear off. I was like sweating.
No, like I could, no, I didn't want to say anything, but girlfriend, you got like, you were talking and I could tell you were trying to like speed it up. Like if you look at yourself in the mirror, like your cheeks are all flushed. I'm like,
it's warm too.
Yeah. I was like, girl, dude, talking.
That was the longest thing of my
life. I feel like you were like really like starting to speed talk there at the end. And I was like, I'm thinking it's okay. Like,
I know it's kind of like that. What episode? I don't think it's posted yet. Let me see the map. Was it?
Maybe by the time this comes out, it'll be posted.
Wisconsin? That really long one where they burned that girl?
Oh, I don't remember. Like, we've recorded so many.
I know, but I think it was in Wisconsin. It had to have been Wisconsin.
Was it something I did? Or mm-hmm. you did it?
No, you did it. Remember? It was over the middle school kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was really long. Not in, like, a bad way, but
yeah.
Now I know how you feel, because you were like, I'm trying to finish. I'm trying to finish.
Yeah, it's, like, super, like, when you get those, they're long. If you guys, like, I'm sure you guys know by now, when we record multiple episodes in one single day.
Yeah, we've been at it for 7 hours already?
Yeah, today? Since about
9 Well, like, 6 hours, because we took 45 minutes for lunch.
Yeah.
We gave ourselves a lunch break in the middle of our work day.
Yeah. Our non-paid work day.
I mean, they pay us on Patreon.
They do pay us on Patreon, but I'm just saying in general. Like,
yeah, no, I'm not getting like a full paycheck for this.
Technically, we do this for fun. Like a weird kind of fun, isn't it?
It is, because when you think about sitting together with somebody in a room for hours and hours and hours and just talking, it doesn't sound that fun.
And talking about death.
Doom and despair.
Doom, despair, the murderous.
But it is fun. It is really fun. You have to be interested in the topic, and we know that that's why everybody is here, because you are.
And that's okay.
There ain't nothing wrong with that. Somebody's got to look into it.
Well, the thing is I know that sometimes, and that's one thing that I've noticed, like a lot of times people think, oh, because I like this, something must be wrong with me. No, nothing is wrong with you. You are not the only one.
The only way that something would be wrong with you is if you acted out what you were learning about.
Right.
So,
don't kill anybody based off of our stories, okay?
Like, I have a degree, my undergrad degree is in history, and one of my favorite things to learn about is war. Specifically,
Ooh, which
war? Well, any war between the Revolutionary War to the end of World War II.
Yeah.
Any of them. Like, Revolutionary, Civil, World War I, World War II, Vietnam.
Whenever I go in, I'll get the stuff. I'm gonna get with my brother and get the stuff then, because you're gonna freak out when I tell you what we have.
Yeah.
And it was locked up in the safe at our old house, and I left it all when we moved. But I'll get it from him. I have an original D-Day invasion map.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Like, the original. And I have pictures and documents and all kinds of stuff that was my dad's step-grandfather's
stuff.
That
is so cool.
And some of it was actually his grandfather's stuff.
I live for stuff like that, but that's just, like, an example. Like, you don't have to... There's nothing wrong with you about being interested in it. Like, one of my favorite people to read about is Adolf Hitler. Because it's not a fascination of like, oh my god, he was so cool. It's a fascination into how can somebody that was literally so innocent as a child, like he wanted to be an artist.
What broke him?
What broke him and caused him to be one of the notorious, like, murderer, like, leaders? Because as far as I know, he didn't kill anybody himself.
Yeah, he's like a cult leader.
Yeah, like what caused him to tick, like what went on, and it doesn't make you weird for being interested in this
because like me with Ted Bundy.
Yeah,
it's like people, all the time.
Like I say all the time, the only way you will understand is if your mind works that way. Otherwise, you're fascinated by it because your mind doesn't, you can't fathom.
Yeah, that's me with Ted Bundy. Like, I just can't figure out like what in him broke and made him think that it was okay to like attack all these women like he did. And, like, that's how I am with Ted Bundy, too. Like, I know that sounds weird, but he's my fave.
Yeah,
You know, you really aren't supposed to have a fave, but like you said, like, Hitler's, like, your favorite thing to learn about. And mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a fascination with, for me, it's more like, how does their brain work like mm-hmm. that? Like, what in their brain went, poof, and made them think, this is a good idea.
Yeah, or that this is okay, or that these random people deserve this. Like,
yeah.
Hitler with all the Jews. Like, what made him think that
He had blonde hair and blue eyes.
Yeah. He and his depiction of the perfect race needed to exist. Like, what? Who hurt you?
Right.
And clearly he was a disturbed individual, but it's like one of those things, like, I don't know, we're going to spiral, but...
What made him wake up one day like Pinky in the Brain and think, today we're going to take over the world?
I just, like, breathed in. Have you ever, like, sprayed perfume or something and you can taste it?
Uh-huh.
That's what's going on, but nobody sprayed anything.
Nope.
I don't know. It's weird.
Anyway. What does it taste like?
Perfume. But not a perfume that I have. I don't know what the heck just happened.
I don't know either, because I do not have on any perfume. I just have on deodorant, and I went to the gym this morning. But your hands? We might have had an encounter in here, guys. Look on Sarah's face.
You got anything in that can?
Huh?
Does that still have drink in it?
Yeah.
Can I have a sip of it? Thank you, I'm out of drink.
Poor Sarah. What was it you told me earlier? You said, oh, when you get a cold chill, a ghost just walks through you?
Yeah, but...
Slavy she
is. Not to be graphic, but did the ghost just, like, in my mouth?
Have you seen the, have you seen the show, the actual show, Ghosts? Have you seen it on TV? Girl, it is hilarious. That one girl, she's, like, a real hippie, and so... When she walks through people, they get stoned.
Oh my gosh.
And so that's what that reminded me of, because the way you just went...
Because it hit me, and I can't... Like, I know the taste. You literally went like...
I was like, is she okay? And you're like... like...
No. And I can't smell it. That's the thing. I can only taste it. It's so weird.
You just had a ghost walk through you and it puffs some perfume.
I don't even know.
Sarah's like, I was
32 seconds away from taking a lick out of Zora's water bowl right there. And it's got his hair in it, I'm sure. That was weird. Anyway.
Well, we had a ghost encounter, apparently.
I need you to stop.
Huh?
Tell my dad I need him to stop.
Anytime I think there's a ghost encounter of any kind,
I blame my father. Because it just puts peace in my heart that it's not some random demon coming after me.
I don't think there's a random demon coming after you.
I don't know. I don't know what they... Maybe this is his pheromone.
Yeah.
Now it tastes like your drink, so I'm okay. Yeah. But
okay.
Thank you for sharing.
All right.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sarah.
Hi, I'm Alicia.
And this is...
Sinister States. And Sarah's dad.
My dad's here somewhere.
Yeah. At this point, we're saying it's her dad.
If you didn't know, my dad is deceased. Just FYI. So if you were touchy to that, skip.
Yeah.
My dad died 3 years ago.
Yeah. But you just said that.
Oh, yeah.
It was your dad. So it's, I was like, my dad. Us and Sarah's dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wayne is here. Wayne has entered the building.
Wayne is in the house. But Wayne can exit.
Wayne has entered the chat.
Right. We're going to need you to exit, though, Wayne. Okay. We got time.
Come back later. Go bother Zorro.
Yeah. Go.
Like when Zorro will like stare at like the wall. I'm like, Dad, will you leave the poor dog alone? He don't want you in the house.
Right.
You don't even know him.
I get freaked out when my cat does that, too.
Did your cat keep playing in the poop?
Oh, she kept playing in the litter box, like there was no poop in it. That's what was fun. Well, I mean, there was a turd in it, but
and you're like, I don't know where this turd came from.
Right, I don't know where the turd came from. So we had this cat that wandered up to our house, Lennox, and if you're a Patreon member, you've seen pictures of her. So we finally got her in the house, and she's loving it. She's like living her bestest life ever.
She loves Leo.
And she is, yeah, Leo and her are like besties for the rest of the
year. She likes to bite his tail, you said?
Yeah. She will just walk up and randomly bite him. And I told my mom the other day, I was like, if Willa, who's my niece, Willa is a straight up gangsta, all right? Mm-hmm. She will hurt, like, she could make a grown man cry with just two words, literally. She's five. But she's no nonsense. And
she punches her own daddy in the nuts sometimes.
Right. And that's what I told my mom. I was like, this cat reminds me of Willa. The way that this cat just will walk up to Leo randomly, bite him on the tail. Leo will squeal. I said, it reminds me so much of how Willa just walks up and like punches Leon right in the crotch and walks off. I said, that's exactly what it reminds me of. I was like, if I had to do over and I knew this cat's like personality, her name would have been Willa. I would have named her after my niece. I really would have. But her name is Lennox. We were going to do Layla, but Ethan started calling her Lennox, and my kid has a hard time remembering names. So Lennox it is. And we had her fixed the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And she has done great with being fixed. Like, the first day, whenever I was talking to Sarah, though, I brought her home, and I had, like, the little soft shell carrier, not the hard plastic thing. And it zips up, and it's got, like, a nice little fur bottom on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they had put paper down in the bottom, and this cat's never seen paper because, like I said, she's only been in my house for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
She's never been indoors, so she's been exposed to a lot of things in the last couple weeks. And she's still very skittish around certain things. But that paper, like the... She was moving around on it like this. She was literally going in circles trying to figure out what the noise was inside the little carrier. And oh, she had just been fixed. And she's, like, dragging her butt in there. And, like, the paper's just... And I'm like, relax. It's gonna be okay. So I get her in the house. And I unzip the carrier. And she comes stumbling out.
Hey.
Yeah. I was like, she's so stoned. That's what I told Sarah. I was like, she is so stoned. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the TikTok video or the video where the owl has been put to sleep and they wake it up and put it... Or they're waking it. Like, it's starting to wake up. And they're putting it in the cage. And it's just staring. And then it... stumbled and then bam, falls face first. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for her to do that. But she kept walking to her food bowl and she would eat and get water. And then she would go over to the litter box and she would smack the litter. Like, she didn't get in the litter box. Like, her badonkadonk was out, but her front two paws were in the litter box. And I told Sarah, I was like, she's literally like a kid playing in a sandbox.
Oh, yeah.
She was smacking a turd around in there. And I still don't know how the turd got in the litter box.
Hey, it's one of life's greatest mysteries at this point.
But she is a very sweet cat. And we are so thankful to have her as an addition. And Leo, though, has had a very hard time with her being fixed. Leo is missing her the whole day. Because Ethan ended up getting sick the other day, the day I took her to have her fixed. So I'm at home with this sick kid.
Leon doesn't have his buddy.
And I'm trying to record episodes for Evil Whispers, and I hear... I'm like, Leo, what is wrong with you? And I walk in the living room, and he's just laying on the couch, just sulking like that. I'm like, dude, really?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I can put you outside with your sister. If you don't stop it, I'm going to chunk you outside, Leo.
And bye-bye.
Leo does not like the great outdoors. Leo would die outside, I'm just being honest.
That's fine. Zora wouldn't make it either.
Another male cat would whoop up on him in a heartbeat, and Leo would lay there and probably take it.
Yeah, Zora wouldn't make it. I mean, he's never lived outside.
Right. Well, Leo is never...
He's only 6 months old.
Leo is... Well, he's going to be... Well, we'll have had him 2 years this year.
Wow.
Or we just had him 2 years. So Leo's getting old.
In terms of a cat?
Well, I'm just
don't
saying.
Don't cats live to be like 25?
They can. But I'm just saying, like, we've had him for 2 years now.
Yeah.
Like, he shouldn't still be scared of himself.
Well, yeah, that's fact.
But he's still scared of himself. Leo has cat anxiety more than any other animal I've ever owned. And it annoys me. And I have anxiety. So he's terrified of himself. And he only loves my husband. So
I feel that.
He's such a, like, I call him a little loser, but he's my buddy.
He's your best friend.
He's not my best friend.
No, Ethan's your best friend, but he's your best cat friend.
Yeah.
Well, he prefers Scott.
Yeah, no, he loves my husband, and he will cry for my husband. And Scott
so is Lennox your best cat friend?
Yes, Lennox. I'm claiming Lennox is mine. I'm going to say she's mine.
And Ethan doesn't have one anymore, right?
Yeah, Luna's outside. She just lives outside.
Oh, she's outside.
Yeah. She straight up waits for Ethan to get out of the car. Like, she's his buddy. But she doesn't like to be inside, so Ethan has to visit his best cat friend outside. I mean, the other cats come to him, but Luna is his cat.
Yeah.
She'd be liking him. And the others are kind of scared of him, so, you know. Luna's a brave soldier. She just likes to hunt things. She likes to eat the things that are outside. I have found squirrels and bunny rabbits and all kinds of things. She's got that hunting instinct, and it's funny because she reminds me of a pair of cats that I had back in the day. When I graduated high school, mm-hmm. my aunt had found these kittens up at the country club where in Wolf Laurel, and she worked there, and there was a mama cat that had had kittens up under the building, and they were trying to catch them all. And so these were the first two that she caught, and we had just had another cat about 2 months earlier that he had been wild. And I'm like an animal tamer, guys. I'll be honest. If you have a wild animal inside your house, let me know. I will come and capture it for you. But Shorty was wild. And it took me a little bit. And within a week, I had him in the house. But he had feline leukemia. Have you ever heard of that?
I haven't. But, I mean, leukemia is cancer.
So. Well, no. Actually, so feline leukemia for cats is like AIDS for human.
Oh.
So, it's very similar to, like, AIDS type thing is what I was told,
mm-hmm.
In cats. And so it's very, like, other cats can catch it real easy.
Oh.
And so he had to live inside,
mm-hmm.
and they can get sick real easy. So he stayed inside, and he made a great escape one night. Oh, my dad. And we couldn't get him back in the house.
Oh.
That evening, and so we got him the next morning, but it got cold that night, and
mm-hmm.
he got cold. But that cold eventually turned into where he had feline leukemia. He got really, really sick, and he ended up dying because there was so much fluid. We had to have him put to sleep because fluid built up in his lungs.
Yeah.
So, it was a couple months later. I was getting ready to graduate high school, and I told my dad I wanted a wiener dog, y'all. I wanted a miniature dash hound. Like, I wanted the tiny wiener dog, not the regular full-size wiener mm-hmm. dog. I wanted the little nugget wiener dog. And he was going to give me one. That was going to be my graduation present. But then my mom was like, I'll never forget her calling me. I was on my way home from school. And she was like, Alicia, she said, I just wanted to warn you. Because she knew I was still upset and Shorty. She said, I just want to let you know that there are two kittens in the bathroom. If you would rather, you know, I don't want you to get upset. If you feel like you're ready for another cat, you know. Maybe this instead of the dog. And I was like, oh, I'll see you when I get home. And I got home and my aunt had brought them and they were in a laundry basket and they knocked the laundry basket over. And I swear they were no longer than this. They were the tiniest kittens I have ever seen in my life. And my mom was like, well, you can keep one if you want to. And I looked at my dad and I was like, can I keep them both? My dad's like, yeah. Aww. So their names are Madison and Susie. And cute. They were sisters. And my aunt, actually, she caught another one and she kept it. And his name is Spook. And they were all like the tortoise shell. So they were really dark. And that's mm-hmm. why she named her Spook. Because it had, like, it was almost like, and it liked to come up and scare you. Like, it would, like, run up on you. So she named it Spook. And Spook is still alive, actually. But Madison and Susie are both gone now. But Luna, Ethan's cat, reminds me of them, those two, so much. That it was like coming full circle. I promise I was bringing it all together. But that's what they remind me of. Or Luna reminds me of them because Luna's like a talker. She'll just meow at you. You can literally stand there and talk to her and she'll meow at you. And sometimes it sounds like she's answering you. Given like a full yes or no answer. Like she sounds like she's... That one day I asked her if she had had a good day and she was just like... Like she was telling me about her whole day.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So we're going to get into our missing person. So yes. Our missing person this week is Aria Denise Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been missing since April 2nd, 1986 from Big Sandy, Texas. Her date of birth is March 26th, 1981. So she would currently be 42 years old. But she went missing at the age of 5. She was roughly 3 foot and weighed 39 pounds at the time. so she is, her characteristics is she is an African-American female, black hair, brown eyes. It said that at the time of her disappearance, two of her lower front teeth were missing. And she has a silver filling in her back right molar. And her nickname is Niecy. And her middle name may be like other places that have her listed mm-hmm. may have her middle name spelled Denise as D-E-N-I-C-E when it's actually D-E-N-I-S-E. But it's the same person if you see the name spelled two different ways.
Okay.
And so the details of her disappearance was Aria was last seen in her bedroom in her family's mobile home in the 300 block of Boulder Street in Big Sandy, Texas on April 2nd, 1986. Her father stated that he last checked on her between 1 and 2:30 a.m., and that when her parents woke between 6:30 and 6:45, she was gone. The back door to the residence was open, and the dark orange bedspread under which Aria was sleeping disappeared with her.
Oh, wow.
And her bedroom was otherwise undisturbed. There were no signs of forced entry to the home, and no one heard anything unusual that night. Tracker dogs found no indication of Aria's scent around her home. So Aria's mother, father, and another man all took polygraphs in 2007. Polygraphs in 2007. Authorities announced they considered David Elliott Pinton a person of interest in her disappearance and in the disappearance and murders of several other young girls, including Amber Crum, Angelica Gondria, and Shannon Sherrill. He has been incarcerated in an Ohio prison since 1987, and he also signed a plea agreement admitting to the murders of three girls in Texas. The Texas victims disappeared over a period of 18 months in the Dallas area and ranged in age from 4 to 9 years old. Pinton was also convicted of manslaughter in the child abuse death of his own infant son in 1984.
Oh my God.
He fled while free on bond, pending the outcome of his appeal, and remained at large until 1987 when he was charged with the murder of a friend's 9-year-old niece in Ohio. He was later convicted of that crime, and his cellmates went to investigators and claimed that he had implicated himself in the disappearance of Aria, Amber, and Angelica, but he's not been charged in connection with any of those disappearances. Foul play is suspected in Aria's case, and authorities believe she was kidnapped by someone who knew her family's habits. She is the second child that her parents lost. Their 6-year-old son accidentally drowned 9 months before Aria's abduction.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so her case still technically remains unsolved. So if you know anything about her disappearance, please reach out to the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. I know some of these cases, it's kind of morbid sounded mm-hmm. because you kind of know what the outcome's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But
you never really know.
You never really know, right? And then the other thing is we see cases, like we have one for New Hampshire. We see cases where there are Jane Does in other states.
Mm-hmm.
So even if we are spreading, like, something that we know, probably not a good outcome, that doesn't mean that somebody might not be listening who doesn't work somewhere and is like, hey, that kind of matches this blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You know, like, we had put... For the Benny Binion, remember? Mm-hmm. I did the missing persons.
Yeah.
And they had found out who she was.
Yeah.
Right at Christmas, right before, like, literally just a couple days before we recorded. And we didn't know because I pulled those, like, weeks in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And I went looking for her case. And she was pulled down because they had finally found out who she was.
Yeah.
And she was there trying to... find her biological father. That's how she ended up in Las Vegas, and she was murdered by somebody.
Yeah.
But anyways, we're going to get on with it. We are in the Texas killing fields, so bear with me.
Ready, but I'm not ready.
And just so you guys know, I'm doing a very brief overview of these, okay?
I should have.
No, your case was amazing, but yours was just one person. I have, what, I was 30 something, 31 or 34, I can't remember, 30 something people
mm-hmm.
In this stretch of highway. So the thing is on Netflix, because mm-hmm. most of us have all of these things, we only have 10,000 subscriptions, right?
Yeah.
On Netflix, there is, it's called The Killing Fields, and it is an episode, or it's a 3-part series, and you can learn a little bit more about a few of the victims.
Mm-hmm.
Because these three are still, like, the one girl, her dad is really, really involved mm-hmm. in trying to help find people.
Yeah.
So, Tim Miller. It's Laura Miller. We'll hear Laura Miller's story here in a little bit. But Laura Miller's father, Tim, to this day, is still trying to get her the justice that she deserves because mm-hmm. her case has still not been solved.
That's insane. I mean, that's great, but that's just so insane.
Well, and not only that, though, he started an equine, like, recovery center. Mm-hmm. So if there's people that go missing, like, he will go out there and help them. Like, you see him in that documentary going on boats. I mean, down in the trenches helping dig for bodies. Like, her dad is all involved in trying to help others find their loved ones.
That's awesome.
So even though he lost his daughter, the loss led him, just like kind of like John Walsh, in my opinion, led to something greater because mm-hmm. he has helped so many families recover their lost one, their loved ones that have been taken from them. Or he goes out and he helps them search and find people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's always a silver lining to even the worst stories. Because, I mean, look at John Walsh. If it were not for Adam Walsh, we would not have the Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Nope.
So, or the alerts in the stores.
All right.
So,
Code Adam.
Yeah, Code Adam's still in the stores. We were talking about that the other night, me and Scott were. Anyway, so the Texas Killing Fields. So, the Texas Killing Fields is a chilling term used to describe the area surrounding Interstate Highway 45 corridor southeast of Houston. This haunting stretch of land has been the site of a series of gruesome discoveries since the early 1970s.
Wow.
With over 30 bodies found in total.
That's great.
However, it is a specific 25-acre patch of land in League City, Texas, that has garnered the most attention as four women were tragically found there between 1983 and 1991. Now, they say women, but some of them were underage.
Mm-hmm.
They're just females. The victims along the corridor were predominantly young girls or women, and it is a harrowing fact that many more young girls have gone missing from that area as well, with their whereabouts still unknown. The age range of the victims is particularly distressing, as most were between the ages of 12 to 25.
Oh my gosh, those were just babies.
In addition, some of these victims shared striking physical similarities, such as similar hairstyles, which we all know makes me believe that somebody's MO, or modus operandi, MO. Mm-hmm. So, despite the relentless efforts of League City, Texas police, and the invaluable assistance of the FBI, the resolution of these murders have been frustratingly elusive. The area itself has been described as a sinister haven for those seeking to commit heinous acts without consequences. One can only imagine the sense of isolation and vulnerability that permeates the Texas Killing Fields. Amy Mann, the director of the film Texas Killing Fields, captured the eerie atmosphere perfectly when she visited the sites where the bodies were discovered in League City. And that's leading back to that show. And at one point, Tim Miller himself, you see him out there in the killing fields showing you where the bodies and stuff were. And he discusses the fact that not long after his daughter's body was found, he was so upset and so distraught that he literally went out there, took his gun, his handgun, and shot into the ground, fired off 6 rounds, and nobody ever came out there.
Dude, that makes me like, people just don't pay attention to stuff like that. And it's so weird. Like, mm-hmm. if there's somebody shooting off rounds, even in the distance here, like, I can hear it and I know mm-hmm. about it. Like, am I going to run out and do anything about it? No. But if you heard 6, like, right in a row.
Nobody called the police, nothing.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Especially if it's not common.
Well, I mean, if you know that that is coming from an area where multiple bodies have been found, I think I would be calling somebody.
Yeah.
So, she remarked on the haunting view of the refineries in the south end of League City and the site of the nearby I-45 highway. However, she also noted the chilling reality that even if one were to scream for help, their cries might go unheard. And if they were to attempt to flee, there would be nowhere to escape to. It is within this desolate landscape that a task force named Operation HALT, Homicide Adult Liaison Team, was formed and consisting of dedicated law enforcement officials and FBI agents. Their sole purpose to investigate these horrifying incidents and bring justice to the victims and their families.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to go into the victims. And at this time, it says confirmed or these are confirmed or suspected victims that are listed. I'm listing them in chronological order from oldest to newest. So Colette Anise Wilson was 13 and she disappeared from the Alvin bus stop on County Road 99 and Highway 6 in Alvin, Texas. After she was dropped off by her band director on June 17, 1971. Her body was found 5 months later, November 26, 1971, near the Attucks Reservoir, close to where the body of Gloria Gonzalez would be discovered 4 months later, just 35 yards from where Colette had been located. And yeah, so Gloria Gonzalez would later be found just 35 yards from where Colette was found. And Wilson had been shot in the head. Wow. That's how she was killed. Then we have Brenda K. Jones, who was 14. She was last seen while walking to Galveston Hospital close to Interstate 45 on her way to visit her aunt on July 1st, 1971 in Galveston, Texas. Her body was found on July 2nd, 1971, floating in nearby Galveston Bay near Pelican Island, close to the Seawolf Parkway and near Interstate Highway 45. She had a sock lodged in her mouth and had died from a head wound. Next, we have Rhonda Renee Johnson, who is 14, and Sharon Lynn Shaw, who is 13. They disappeared in Harris County, Texas on the afternoon of August 4th, 1971. Both were seen walking along Seawall Boulevard in Galveston near a local beach, and on January 3rd, 1972... two boys fishing in Clear Lake discovered a human skull floating in the water, which they had initially believed to be a sports ball. Probably thinking it was like a baseball or something like that. 6 weeks later, searchers discovered the rest of the body along with that of another girl in a marsh near the lake. According to a coroner's inquest filed on February 17, 1972, the skull found in the lake was determined to be a dental records to belong to Sharon Shaw. Additionally, a crucifix wrapped around the jawbone of the skull was identified by Shaw's mother to have been her property. The other body found in the marsh was positively identified as Johnson. And unfortunately, their cause of death could not be determined, probably due to the elements. Oh, the way my toes are?
No! I'm trying to touch toes with you because we're sitting the same.
I know. I sit like this all the time.
Me too. It's so bad.
Probably not good for my knees.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, my knees always hurt. But.
So, next we have Gloria Ann Gonzalez.
Yeah, the one that was found by... Right.
She was 19 at the time of her disappearance. She was last seen October 28th, 1971, near her apartment on Jocelyn Street in Houston, Texas. And her skeletal remains were found near Attucks Reservoir in the same area as Colette Wilson on November 23rd, 1971. And she died from blunt force trauma to the head.
Dang.
Allison Ann Craven was 12.
Oh, my goodness.
She was reported missing by her mother November 9th, 1971, when she returned to their apartment in Houston, Texas, near Interstate 45, after completing shopping errands for 1 hour. 3 months later, police found Craven's partial skeletal remains in a nearby field. Two hands, along with bones from an arm and some teeth. On February 25th, 1972, the rest of her skeleton was found in a Perlin, Texas field, also near Interstate 45 and 10 miles from where she was last seen. So her remains were scattered in two different places.
That's awful.
Ooh, Debbie Catherine Ackerman and Maria Talbot Johnson, they were both 15, were last seen attempting to hitchhike to Houston, Texas.
Houston, Texas?
Near an island ice cream shop in Galveston on November 15, 1971. So this is just 6 days after the other girl disappeared. Witnesses reported seeing a man in a white van stopping by the curb and picking up the girls after agreeing to drive them to Houston. Their bodies were found, bound, and partially nude in Turner's Bayou on November 17, 1971, near Texas City. An autopsy later determined that both teens had been shot to death before being tied down and thrown into the water.
That's disgusting.
Kimberly Ray Pitchford was 16. She was last seen at Dobie High School in Houston, Texas, While she was there for a driving test on January 3rd, 1973, she just went to take her driving test. Her body was found by two teenage boys 2 days later in a ditch in Angleton, Texas, around noon on County Road 65 in Brazoria County on January 5th, 1973. She was wearing a blue dress, but her watch and shoes were missing. She had died by strangulation.
Oh my gosh.
Brooke Bracewell was 12 and Georgia Caroline Gear was 14. Both were last seen at the Utote M convenience store off of Interstate 45 on September 6, 1974. Georgia was last seen in an orange outfit. Brooks was wearing plaid high-rise pants and a gold V-neck sweater. In 1976, some of the remains were found by police in Alvin, Texas, but due to neglect, were not identified as hers until a new detective took over the case in 1981. The ditch where they were originally found on April 3rd, 1981 was re-examined and more remains as well as fragments of a gold sweater and plaid pants were found.
Crazy.
Suzanne Susie Bowers was 12.
There's a lot of 12-year-olds.
Right.
That's crazy.
Was last seen walking along a 3-minute route between her grandmother's house at the 4000 block of Avenue S and her own home at the 3100 block of Avenue P.
So she wasn't even going that far.
3-minute walk. At around 10:45 a.m. on May 21st, 1977 in Galveston, Texas, the 7th grader was going home to get her swimsuit to go to the beach. Her skeletal remains were found 2 years later in Alta Loma, Texas on March 25th, 1979. Her skull appeared to have gunshot wounds, but investigators were unable to determine the exact cause of her death.
I have to keep reminding myself that it was a very different time in the 70s because I'm just thinking to myself, like, why are all of these girls, like, alone at these little ages? But it was a completely different time.
Yeah.
You could do that, or you thought you could anyway.
Yeah. So, Tina Glenn Klaus was 17 and Harold Dean Klaus Jr. was 20. That was her husband.
Okay, so we have a man in here now.
They were found January 12, 1981 in northern Harris County, Texas, in a boggy wooded area just north of the Houston city limits. A civilian's dog let to wander into the woods was returned to its owner. Like, the dog went out into the woods, come back with a decomposing human arm. Search parties prompted by the dog's discovery subsequently found the heavily decomposed bodies of the Klaus couple near the Wallaceville Road, and despite the significant decomposition, it was determined they were both victims of homicide. Tina had been strangled and Harold had been bound and gagged before being beaten to death. They did have their infant daughter Holly with them
They never found her.
They did. In 2021, forensic genealogists positively identified Dean and Tina, and in 2002, their daughter, Holly Marie, was located alive in Oklahoma.
Yeah, well, I remember hearing about their bodies being discovered on a different podcast, and they wondered for a very long time what happened to the daughter.
Baby Holly, and they found her. Yeah, they found her. I remember when news broke that they had found her, and I was like, is this the same? And I looked,
she's still alive, the same right? One.
She's alive.
Yeah, now.
Yep. And apparently, I was like, I'm going to kind of look into this. Apparently, she was dropped off at an orphanage in that kind of, pretty much in the area where she was adopted. Yeah,
I think I heard about that.
Or in Indiana, something like that.
Where they were, like, with these, like, women missionaries or something.
Yeah.
And they took the daughter and then killed them. Like, I'm not saying that they're the ones that killed them, but they're the ones that took the daughter.
So, they're in that same stretch of highway, though, where their bodies were found. That's why they're included in this.
Yeah. Because
this is literally, like it said, like, just a corridor there, and all of these bodies have been dumped there. So now we have Michelle Angela Garvey was 15, and she went missing from New London, Connecticut. Presumably after running away from home on June 1st, 1982, at the age of 14. But her body was found on July 1st, 1982, in Baytown, Texas, 1 month after she went missing. The cause of death of the victim was determined to be strangulation. There was evidence that Garvey had been sexually assaulted. Her body was found wearing brown clothing, including a long sleeve button-down shirt, and button-down shirt with a distinct horse embroidery on the breast pockets. The body was decomposed in a field after, or the body was decomposed of, or the body was disposed. I'm struggling to get my word out there. Disposed of in a field after she died, possibly hours after her murder. She was buried near two other unidentified murder victims found in 1981 who were identified in 2021 as Dean and Tina Klaus. Yeah. So Garvey was identified in January of 2014. So for the longest time, they didn't know who she was through the efforts of the NCMEC and by the Harris County Police Department, who contacted her family and obtained samples of DNA for testing. So it sounds like a lot of these people they're slowly but surely getting to testing some of these old cases.
Mm-hmm.
So Susan Lee Eads was 20. She was a cocktail waitress who left her home in Harris County at around 4:30 p.m. on August 30th, 1983. The following day, a motorist discovered her body a few miles from her home. She was naked and had bruises on her back and face. Susan had been strangled to death with the bodysuit that she was wearing, which was used as a tourniquet. Her car was found parked adjacent to the vacant lot where she was found, and an autopsy determined that she had been sexually assaulted. Eads was last seen at a local club with a white man wearing a cowboy hat. Her mother received phone calls from an unidentified man who claimed to have photos of her daughter. He referred to himself as Bill and said that he lived in Houston, Texas. The DNA profile extracted from Eads' body was matched to Arthur Raymond Davis Jr., a Vietnam War veteran and a boat captain. He had died in January 16, 1984 after a single vehicle accident. So they were able to determine through DNA who her murderer was.
Wow.
But out of all of these that I've read so far,
that's the only one.
That's the only one that we've determined who her murderer was.
Yeah.
So then October 10th, 1983, cocktail waitress Heidi Marie Villarreal, 5, was 25. And she was last seen at a convenience store located off of West Main Street in Hobbs in League City, Texas. And on April 4th, 1984, her remains were discovered after a dog brought her skull to a nearby house in Cadler Field and on the 300 block of Cadler Road near League City, Texas. The medical examiner determined that she had broken ribs and had been beaten with a club. She was believed to have died from blunt force trauma to the head. Then we have Sandra K. Ramber, who was 14, and she was last seen at her family home in Santa Fe, Texas on October 26, 1983. She was determined to be missing due to the fact that the front door was left open, food was in the oven, and her purse and coat were still in the house. She was initially believed to have gone to the store for a moment, but she never returned. And she's still at this point. They never found her or anything.
Oh, wow.
But she was missing, I guess from that same area. Then we have Laura Lynn Miller, who is 16. She was last seen September 10th, 1984, at the same convenience store where Villarreal Fry, Heidi, was last seen. It was last seen at a year earlier in League City, Texas. She was using a payphone to call her boyfriend, and her remains were found February 2nd, 1986, 60 feet away from where police had found Heidi.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So those two are two of the four where they were talking about that main section, that mm-hmm. Cobbler Field. Those are two of the four. Like I was talking about the Killing Field episode or the three-part series on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
They just basically discussed those four bodies that were found in the field there.
Wow.
So next we have Ellen Ray Simpson Beeson. She was 29 and she was last seen July 29th, 1985 at the Texas Moon Club in League City, Texas, where she met local construction worker Clyde Hedrick. Later that evening, she told her friends that she and Hedrick had plans to go swimming. Her decomposed remains were discovered underneath a sofa in a wooded area beside Old Causeway Road in Galveston County. The medical examiner was unable to determine the cause of death at that time, but upon the exhumation of her remains in 2012, it was ruled that she had suffered several severe skull fractures.
Wow.
Then 17-year-old Michelle Dougherty Thomas was last seen leaving her familial family residence in Santa Fe, Texas on October 5th, 1985, after having returned from work at a Galveston, Texas gas station. So once again, we have a gas station. Mm-hmm. She left to meet with friends at a nearby local nightclub located in Galveston Island for... So acquaintances claimed that they had stopped at a convenience store on the way to the nightclub, and Michelle had gotten into a vehicle with two men, and she has not been seen since. Authorities believe that she may have been abducted and murdered. Once again, there's another missing person from the same area. They never found her. So Audrey Lee Cook was last heard from in late December 1985. Her remains were found in the field in the 3,000 blocks of Calder Road on the same day as the body of Laura Miller was located near. The victims' bodies were not buried, but rather hidden away from view. Both were left in a supine position near a tree. Mm-hmm. Cook had a small caliber gunshot wound to the back, severing her spine, and she had suffered additional injuries to several ribs. She was identified in April 2019, along with Donna Prudhomme via genetic analysis, where they were doing DNA testing, because there was two of them. Mm-hmm. If you watched that show, there's two of them that they didn't identify until 2019.
That's crazy.
So then we have Shelley Kathleen Sykes. She was 19. She was last seen leaving her job as a waitress at Gato's Seafood Restaurant on the beachfront in Galveston, Texas, prior to 12 a.m. on May 24th, 1986. Her car was found the next day stuck in mud, bloodstained, and abandoned on the side of Interstate 45. South of the Galveston Causeway. The driver's side window had been broken and bloodstains were discovered on the door and on the driver's seat. She has never been found, but her killer has been charged and convicted in her murder.
Dang!
Yeah.
They never found her, but they found the dude that did it. Or the woman, but probably a dude.
Yeah. I think we might go over him. Yeah, we'll discuss him.
Okay.
Because I've got who they think killed some of these people, but some of them they couldn't prove. Suzanne Renee Richardson was 22. She was employed as a night clerk at Casa Del Mar Condominiums on Seawall Boulevard in Galveston. She was last seen at work at 6 a.m. on October 7th, 1988 by resort security guards. And shortly afterwards, another employee who was sleeping in the room above her office heard a loud female scream. The witnesses claimed to have then heard a car door slam shut, accompanied by another scream and the sound of a car speeding away from the parking lot. A guest arrived at Richardson's office to check in around 6:30 a.m. and discovered the desk abandoned. One of her shoes was located in the parking lot later that morning, but she's never been seen again.
Wow.
Then we have Donna Marie Prudhomme, who is 34. She was last heard from July 1991 in Nassau Bay, Texas, and on September 8th, 1991, a local resident came across her badly decomposing body in a field beside Calder Road. A medical examination concluded she died at least six weeks prior, yet a cause of death could not be determined. She was identified in April 2019, along with Audrey Cook. And they were found at the same time that Laura Miller was found. Those three bodies were all found together in the same field at the same time.
Dang.
Yeah.
So it's probably the same person.
Right. Well, there was technically four because you had Heidi first. And mm-hmm. they found Heidi, like, not long after. But then they found the other three together at the same time. So, February 1st, 1996, Lynette Bibbs was 14 and Tamara 15. Tamara Fish was 15. They visited a Houston club for teenagers. And a 22-year-old male later claimed to have dropped the friends off at a motel near City Center and on Old Spanish Trail. The bodies of the two girls were found dumped by a rural road 2 days later on February 3rd, 1996. In Cleveland, Texas, they had both been shot, but police suspect that they were shot by different people.
Interesting.
So, next we have Crystal Jean Baker. She was 13. She was last seen near Interstate 45 on March 5th, 1996 in Texas City, leaving her grandmother's home for a convenience store to use the payphone. Again, after an argument. Crystal was last seen using a phone at a local convenience store to ask her friend if she could stay with her. 2 hours later, her body was found. She had been raped, strangled, and dumped over the Interstate 10 Trinity River Bridge. Baker's grand aunt was... Well, I don't know. That doesn't matter. Kevin Edison Smith was convicted of capital murder in her death in 2012 and sentenced to life in prison. In 2019, Governor Greg Abbott signed into law the Crystal Jean Baker Act, which permits the collection of DNA from individuals arrested for certain felonies prior to conviction.
Hmm.
That's pretty good. Thank you for that, Greg Abbott. I wish that was in all states.
Yeah.
So, April 3rd, 1997, Laura Smither was 12, was last seen in Friendswood, Texas, jogging down her home street. She was jogging down her street.
Mm-hmm.
April 3rd, 1997, after telling her mother she was going on a 20-minute run. 17 days later, on April 20th, 1997, her body was found in a retention pond in Pasadena, Texas. And in 1998, her parents established the Laura Recovery Center, a nonprofit organization that aids in the search for the recovery of kidnapping victims. William Lewis Reese was convicted of the murders of Laura Smither, Kelly Cox, and Jessica Kane. So, Kellyanne Cox was 20. She was last seen July. You know
what's crazy?
What?
I went to high school with a guy named Tim Cox, and his sister's name is Kellyanne.
Really?
Yep.
So, Kellyanne Cox was 20. She was last seen July 15th, 1997, at a Conoco gas station and convenience store in Denton, Texas.
Wow.
After locking herself out of her car and making a call to her boyfriend for help, using the station's outdoor payphone... Over 18 years later, on March 18th, 2016, Kelly's remains were discovered after suspected serial killer William Lewis Reese directed investigators to search an area in Brazoria County, Texas, where her remains were found.
So that was her killer? Okay, I'm just making sure that
two
were together.
And I've got, here are the suspects, and I'll kind of go into it and tell you who was found. Because not all of them were arrested. And these people never got justice. Jessica Lee Kane, 17, was last seen at the Bennigan's restaurant near Baybrook Mall in Clear Lake, Texas, dining with friends at around 1:30 a.m. She was reported missing on August 17th,
1997. That was the day before my birthday.
Right.
I would have been 4.
When her father found her truck
I was going to be 4. Anyway,
yeah.
I'm still alive.
Yeah. When her father found her truck abandoned along Interstate 45.
Her own father found it?
Mm-hmm. And on March 18th, 2016, her remains were finally found in a field off East Orem Road next to Hobby Airport. Suspected serial killer William Lewis Reese directed investigators to search the area where her remains were found.
So he killed her too.
Yep. And then we have Todd Tran Harriman, was 57. Was visiting relatives in Texas and had mapped out a route between League City and Corpus Christi, Texas, and planned to drive Highway 35. She departed at approximately 5 a.m. on July 12, 2001 from her son's residence near League City. She was last seen driving her 1995 Lincoln Continental on Highway 35. Neither she nor her car have ever been found.
Dang.
Then we have Sarah Ann Lewis Trusty. She was 23. Last seen during the evening hours of July 12th, 2002, in Algoa, Texas, near her church, riding a bicycle. The bike was found in the foyer of the Algoa Baptist Church the next day, and her body was discovered July 28th, 2002. Basically in a ditch in Texas, in Texas City, in a nearby reservoir. So that's where she was found. Then Teresa Ann Vangus was 16. She was last seen in Dixon, Texas, walking near the Green K subdivision on October 31st, 2006. 3 days later, her body was found strangled, raped, with her hair cut off in a field across from the high school. So, we're going to get into some suspects for this wide variety of murders.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, some of them I feel like go together. Like, yeah, all the payphones.
Yeah, that's
an MO. That to me screams the same person.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, this is long. I knew it was going to be long. So, our first suspect is Michael Lloyd Self. Michael Lloyd Self in 1972 was working at as a gas station operator and had a criminal record as a sex offender. Mm. He found himself at the center of the murder investigations in Galveston. The victims that were in question for him were Rhonda Johnson and Sharon Shaw. As the investigation progressed, Self became a suspect and was subjected to hours of intense interrogation. Eventually, under pressure, he confessed to the murders. Following his confession, he was taken to the district jail, and he cooperated with the local authorities in locating the bodies. However, in the months that followed, he retracted his confessions, claiming that it had been coerced through torture. According to Self, the interrogators had suffocated him with a plastic bag, burned him with cigarette butts, and a radiator. Even alleged he had been assaulted by the police chief, Don Morris. Despite the inconsistencies in Self's confession, though, including discrepancies regarding the victim's clothes, the dates of the murder, the location of the body, and the method used to kill them, he was convicted on September 18, 1974, for the murder of Sharon Shaw. And he received a life imprisonment sentence. The case, though, did take a surprising turn when 3 years later, when Don Morris, the police chief, and his deputy, Tommy Deal, were arrested and found guilty of various crimes, including torture and misconduct against detainees.
God forbid.
Like he said. So Morris was sentenced to 55 years and Deal was sentenced to 30 years. In the aftermath of the revelations, though, Michael Self continually sought appeals, hoping to prove his supposed innocence. However, his appeals were consistently denied, and he passed away December 21st, 2000, while still in custody.
Dang.
And then it was only after his death that several police officials, including the former Harris County District Attorney, publicly expressed their belief that Self had been wrongly convicted.
I don't like it here anymore.
The case serves as a stark reminder of the complexities of our criminal justice system, doesn't it?
I don't like it here anymore.
Was claiming he was being beaten by them and coerced to say all of these things. But he did lead them to the bodies, they said. So that makes me wonder. Then we have Edward Harold Bell. Ooh. So in the 1970s, an investigation conducted by the League City Police and the FBI on local resident Edward Howard Bell. He was known he had a troubling history of being arrested multiple times for exposing himself to children. He did manage to avoid imprisonment on each occasion, and he resided near the beach in Galveston. And he was a silent partner in a surf shop and had connections with two victims that were found, Debbie Ackerman and Maria Johnson, who both frequented the store that he was a silent partner in. Bell would later move to Dixon, where he would live close to two more victims, Brooks Bracewell and Georgia Gear. In 1978, while engaging in lewd behavior in front of a group of teenage girls, he was confronted by Larry Dickens, a 26-year-old former Marine. As Dickens called the police, he bravely took action by removing the keys from Bell's vehicle and refusing to return them. And in an act of retaliation, Bell killed Dickens and fled the scene. However, his escape was short-lived and he was apprehended by the police soon after. He did manage to post bail a few weeks later. How you get bail for straight up killing somebody, I don't know. But he chose to evade conviction and further imprisonment by fleeing Texas and ultimately escaping the United States all the way around. I guess he fled to Mexico. He managed to elude law enforcement for over 2 decades. But they finally caught up to him in 1993 when he was arrested in Panama and extradited back to the United States. He did face the charges of murder for Larry Dickens and was subsequently convicted and received a 70-year sentence. It was during this time in custody that he made a chilling confession. And in 1998, he wrote several more confessions to the murders of 5 girls in 1971 and 6 more between 1974 and 77. Although he couldn't recall the name of the victims, names of most of his victims, Bell confidently admitted to killing Debbie Ackerman, Maria Johnson, Colette Wilson, Kimberly Pitchford, as well as 2 other unidentified girls he had abducted from Webster in August 1971, later identified as Rhonda Johnson and Sharon Shaw. Despite these shocking confessions, though, Bell was never formally charged with these additional murders due to the lack of technically incriminating evidence other than him saying he done it. Nevertheless, he remained a prime suspect until his death in April of 2019. Is that not ridiculous? He's saying that he murdered them and they still wouldn't put him in, like, convict him of it. Which, I mean, he had 70 years, so maybe they were thinking they needed to use their time for something else. Like, they knew he wasn't getting out anytime soon.
Right.
Then we have Mark Ronald Stallings. Mark Ronald Stallings is a convicted kidnapper serving a life sentence, and he made a startling confession in 2013. He admitted to the heinous crime killing of a young girl named Donna Prudham back in 1991 and callously disposed of her body in the vast fields.
Nice.
Was
she part of your list? Sorry, yeah. There were so many.
Yeah. So what makes this revelation even more chilling, though, was the proximity of Stallings' residence and workplace in League City to the homes of several other missing girls who were later found dead. The details provided in his testimony are remarkably consistent, which, you know, leads them to believe that he potentially could be involved in some of the other girls' murders mm-hmm. as well. Because she was one of the ones that they found in the field with the other 3.
Yeah.
But he remains a prime suspect in the brutal killings of Donna Prudham and Audrey Cook, as well as 2 other unrelated murders in Fort Bend County. But he was not charged for any of the murders, even though
he said that he did them. But he was already incarcerated when he said it, right?
Right. Yeah. So then we have Clyde Edwin Hedrick. And Clyde Hedrick is a name that becomes synonymous with the chilling events depicted in the gripping 2022 documentary crime scene, The Texas Killing Fields, which is what I discussed. This notorious figure had already made headlines in 2021 when he was sentenced to a staggering 20 years in prison for the brutal murder of Ellen Beeson back in 1984. However, his release from jail in the same year raised eyebrows and sent shockwaves through the community. But since his release, Hedrick had been residing in a halfway house, a place that offers a semblance of normalcy for individuals transitioning back into society. But that tranquility was short-lived as the tables turned against him in a dramatic turn of events. And in a stunning twist, Tim Miller, a former neighbor of Hedrick's, now remember his daughter, Laura, he emerged victorious in a wrongful death suit that wrongful death suit against Clyde Hedrick for his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And he was convicted and held civilly liable for her death, but they could not criminally convict him of killing Laura.
That's so insane to me.
So, but... Yeah. So he did have a very, very dark past. His criminal record included charges of trespassing, theft, abuse of a corpse, attempted arson, possession of marijuana, driving while intoxicated, and even sexual assault. All of that is on his history before the charges of murder. But it is said that in a jailhouse confession that he admitted to the murder of Laura Miller and Heidi Fye. But he was never charged for those.
That's so crazy to me.
So, we did have some that we did get convictions and closed cases on. So, I'm going to go over that real quick. The Ellen Beeson case. In 1985, Clyde Edwin Hedrick, a suspected serial killer, which is the same guy we just talked about, he was brought in for questioning connected to the suspicious death of Ellen Beeson. And during interrogation, he supposedly said that he and Beeson had gone swimming in a nearby lake after leaving a local bar. However, he claimed that Beeson had accidentally drowned while they were in the water. Out of fear of being accused of foul play, he confessed to disposing of her body. At the time, her cause of death could not be determined, but in 1996, he was convicted of abusing her corpse and received a one-year jail sentence. Then in 2011, Hedrick's ex-wife approached authorities and revealed that Hedrick had frequently made incriminating remarks about Beeson's death. And the new information, combined with a second autopsy conducted on Beeson's body, prompted authorities to obtain an arrest warrant and charge Hedrick with her murder in 2014. So, remember we talked about her? She was the one that had multiple head trauma. They exhumed her body.
Yeah, this is like the same girl. Fracture.
Right. She had multiple skull fractures. This is the same girl. So, he was originally charged with abuse of her corpse in the beginning, but they came back and charged him with murder in 2014. But he was eventually charged with and convicted of involuntary manslaughter. And he was released from the Estelle Supermax Penitentiary in Huntsville, Texas on October 2021.
Damn.
So the case of Ellen Beeson, though, they did get some justice, at least for her. And unfortunately, the other cases that he was involved in, potentially the Heidi Fye and the Laura Miller, they are still open. Even though, you know, as we discussed earlier, even though he supposedly admitted in jail to another inmate that he done it.
Yeah.
So the Shelley Sykes case. In 1987, John Robert King made a distressing call to the El Paso police and confessed to the brutal assault of Shelley Sykes in 1986. Alongside Gerald Peter Swartz, they attacked Sykes while in the car with her, subjecting her to rape and strangulation. Despite their arrest, the location of Sykes' body remained a mystery as they provided direction. Their provided directions proved futile. They could never find her. Eventually, both King and Zwart were convicted of aggravated kidnapping and sentenced to life imprisonments in 1998. While they were investigated for this other similar crimes, they adamantly denied any involvement. King passed away in prison from natural causes October of 2015, followed by Zwart in November of 2020. So that's the one where you were like, oh, so they got her killer, but they didn't get her.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why. Because they never provided accurate locations for her.
I hope they find her body at some point.
So next we have Crystal Jean Baker. So Crystal Jean Baker's case took a turn in April of 2012 when Kevin Edson Smith was apprehended and later convicted for the crime. 3 years prior, Smith had been arrested on a drug charge in Louisiana, coinciding with the moment when a detective decided to test Baker's dress for DNA.
Nice.
Utilizing advanced technology that wasn't accessible during Crystal's disappearance, a match was confirmed, leading to his swift conviction. Following a mere 30-minute deliberation, the jury found him guilty, resulting in a life sentence behind bar. Next, we have the cases of Sandra Spawn, Tiffany Johnson, Jessica Kane, Kelly Cox, and Laura Smither.
In May, the payphone girls?
Some of them were, yeah.
Okay.
So in May 1997, William Lewis Reese was apprehended for abducting and attempting to kill 19-year-old Sandra Spawn in Webster. He was later found guilty and sentenced to 60 years in prison. 60. I know I stuttered. And in 2015, his DNA was linked to the murder of 19-year-old Tiffany Johnson, who was discovered deceased in Oklahoma in 1997. So that's the reason why her name probably doesn't sound familiar to you guys. Following this revelation, though, he admitted to murdering Jessica Lee Kane, Kellyanne Cox. At that point, he provided investigators with the locations of their buried bodies. In 2016, he confessed to the killing of Laura Smither to the Friendswood police, and Reese was also, he was convicted of Johnson's murder in 2021 and received the death penalty. The next year, he was extradited to Texas and convicted of the murders of Smither, Kane, and Cox. And
he's in Texas.
He's in Texas now, and yes. So there's that. I guess Oklahoma was like, well, we just have him for one. You go ahead and take him.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah. So as for the other murders, they're still unsolved to this day. But Tim Miller, like I said, Laura's father is still fighting for her to this day. And he definitely wants their murderer to be brought to justice.
Yeah. That was wild.
I told you. It was, and that is the short version.
Yeah.
Imagine if I would have went into details.
Well, like, it's a 3-part series on Netflix.
Right. But, and that's just for 4 of the girls.
Yeah.
That's not even all of them.
And there
them.
Was
that's
like 35 that you listed.
Yeah. And some of them have never been found.
That's crazy.
Well, at the point that this goes up, we will have already posted our Sinister Guess Where.
Yeah.
So, y'all now understand what I meant at the beginning when I said, I don't know about these killing fields, because Alicia did a Sinister Guess Where based on killing fields in Wisconsin.
The Wisconsin.
But I knew that she was going to cover the killing fields, because if you guys don't know, we obviously cover the same state simultaneously.
Yeah.
So we do discuss what we're going, like, we don't go in depth and, like, research each other's stuff, but we do give a list of, like, I'm covering this so we know that the other person isn't going to do it.
Yeah.
So I knew that she was doing the killing fields, and she threw me for a loop on that Sinister Guess Where, because I thought it was going to be Texas. And Texas was one of the options that you gave me, and I'm sure that's why.
Yeah, it was.
So, but apparently there's killing fields
everywhere
in other states, so.
Yeah. And I feel like Texas itself, like, the amount of serial killers, like, I sent Sarah a message. I was like, girl, I'm having a hard time picking.
Yeah.
Because I had the Candyman. Like, who is he?
Yeah.
He is wild if you never looked into him. Then there was the guy, the train guy. Then there was, I can't even, there was the axe person from, like, the 1800s that they thought may have been Jack the Ripper and come to the United States. Like, I'm like, I could do, like, a whole series on Texas serial killers alone.
Yeah.
We might have to.
We might have to, because there's a lot of stuff to do. Well, thank you for shedding light onto that. I didn't know. I've heard of other, like, stretches of interstate or, like, fields near interstates where people will dump bodies and stuff, but nothing like that. Mm-mm. Nothing to that extent. That was insane.
34.
Yeah, that's insane.
Or 31. 30. No, I don't remember.
There's over
there's
30.
So many.
That's crazy.
Too many. Sounds like they just need to put a police officer out there.
Yeah. The monitor. Like, who's dumping what?
Right.
That's crazy. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And thank you for shedding light, because it seems like a lot of this stuff is even, like, more recent-ish.
Yeah.
Like the 90s, early
2000s. Well, that old man is still alive.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about, like, the murders, like, the body dumping itself.
Oh, yeah, but I'm just saying, in general, like, the man that supposedly they think killed Laura, that one dude, he's still out and about now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that always, like, baffled me, because I feel like you're never too old. Like, if you're a notorious, like, murderer or criminal in general, they always, like, try and, unless you've, like, proven that you can't be let out, they'll usually, like, try and let lesser criminals out in their old age because they think that they're too frail to offend again.
Yeah.
But I don't know about you, but there was a murderer somewhere. He had killed, like, 2 people, and he was incarcerated when he was, like, in his, like, 20s or 30s, and they let him out when he was in his, like, 70s or 80s. And they're like, oh, yeah, this old man's, like, never gonna offend again. He was out for, like, 2 weeks, and he killed somebody. And he went right back to prison to die. And I'm like, you are never too old if you have the will to do something.
Right.
Like, I just think that's crazy.
Especially if it's like, I'm just going to say it. Like, it seems like a lot of these crimes in that area were sexually motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And so, especially if you're somebody who's, like, sexually motivated, I don't feel like that's anything, even with age, that's just going to
go away. That's
going to go away. Whether you can still
get it up
or perform not. Or not.
Just say the words, get it up or not.
Like, I feel like you would
the
still
desire is there to do something.
Yeah.
So it's crazy, but, well, I hope everybody
there's that.
Enjoyed that. We thank you so much.
And we have gave you the longest 2 episodes ever.
I think the only 2 that might be longer are the ones that we did at the beginning, like South Carolina, North Carolina, and New York.
Yeah, maybe.
Because those were kind of long because we were getting our bearings about us.
Yeah,
but
we try to keep them, like, reasonable, but these, there was just no way to make them any
no.
Shorter. Every mine now is, and then we have that.
Mine's like 1 hour and 20 minutes.
I'm at 1 hour and 13, 14. Yeah.
Well, it's supposed 14. To be 1 hour and 15, but.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. Thank you so much. Hopefully everybody enjoyed that. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Patreon. I'm sure you're sick of talking, but any last words for the fans?
Definitely lock your doors. And don't play with Ouija boards forever.
Yeah. And as always, there's probably something sinister right in your own backyard.
Bum, bum, bum.